I'm Kay Thompson, Love and welcome to... Hello, everyone. I'm Kay Thompson, and welcome to Kay Thompson Live here on Blog Talk Radio. As you know, we are on every Wednesday from 8 until 9, and my co-host is, and my producer is Eric Payne, and he will be joining us in just about, a few seconds. But we're going to be talking about a number of hot-button subjects today. And a lot of the things are in the news. You have been hearing them. You are aware of them. And, of course, you know, everybody's so worried about the Ebola scare. Am I saying that correctly? The Ebola scare. Anyway, the health concern. And really, it's really very, very serious. And, you know, the young man who, you know, had landed at, you know, the airport in Texas, you know, he did pass. So we were all very, very concerned about that. So we're going to, you know, urge everyone, if you have any health concerns at all, you should be checking with your doctor, and you also should be getting your necessary flu shots and everything that is necessary to keep you from staying away, to keep you staying away and staying healthy from any kind of germs that might be, you know, anywhere around. It's really a very sad thing that we, in this day and age, we have to be concerned about such a serious illness. And, you know, especially when you're in the airport. But you have to go through all the changes that's necessary to keep you safe. And I think we might be joined now with Eric Payne. I hope he's on the phone. And we're also waiting to be joined with, Eric, hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Go right ahead.
All right. Yeah. Hey, how you doing, Ma? Hello to everybody out there on Kay Thompson, the Kay Thompson Live Show. Just want to say happy Wednesday to everybody. It's the second Wednesday in October 2014, and
yeah.
It's a little bit scary, especially when you have when you have a disease like that that gets out. I'm just observing things and observing that the. I can't help but not observe that the African American, the black guy died and the white people lived. That's what I noticed. But you know, that's probably hopefully just a coincidence. And they said if you watch the news, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are avid news watchers, that even the nephew of the gentleman that passed away was saying he felt that they weren't treated fairly. You know, the hospital, you know, turning the gentleman away when he presented symptoms of clearly, obviously, Ebola. And then once they got Reverend Jesse Jackson involved, it seemed that, you know, their calls were being returned and things were starting to move. And
Hello?
Go ahead.
You know, when that first happened, you know, when he was first at the airport and we first heard about it, I was wondering, since he did have some initial ailments, and for him to be turned away, he was from Liberia. My first thought was when they turned him away to go back to his community, you know, and my first thought was Ebola, and they would have him to check people. My first thought was maybe he is black, and maybe the people don't treat him seriously. And apparently that may have been what happened.
Well, I mean, it would have been a good, it would have been a great, it's not a hard guess saying he's from Liberia that he's probably black. So, I mean, that kind of stands to reason. It's an African country. The thing is that he was, that he was turned away. And we are joined by our other host, Mr. Wayne Gilman. Come on in here, Wayne.
Hey, good evening, Eric. Good evening, Kay.
Hi, Wayne.
Just glad to be here. Sorry about the sad news about the young man who died. And obviously, the medical officials in Texas dropped the ball there.
Yeah.
And I don't want to pull the race card, although it's crossed my mind. I know, Eric, I got the sense you were just talking about that.
Yeah, exactly.
I just made the observation that I'm sure you made, that the only Ebola patient in America to die was the black guy. So, you know, and they got all these serums and all these medicines to give to the other folks, and it's just interesting, you know.
It really is. You know, I don't want to go there. I want to feel that, you know, everybody has a fair shake when it comes to things like this. But, you know, what I look back on is the manner in which they sort of trivialized his condition in the beginning, you know. They didn't take him seriously.
That's exactly what I was saying. When I first heard that story, you know, as I was telling Eric, you know, I thought, well, why wouldn't they, you know, keep him there if the Ebola, since the Ebola scare, you know, was here? You know, everybody was talking about it, and then they treated him. Here he's from Liberia, and he has some illness or some, you know, symptoms of something, and they, you know, they turned this young guy, this guy away, and I was wondering, I wonder if he's black, and like coming from Liberia was very much a possibility, and lo and behold, that's exactly what it was. He should never have been turned away in the first place.
Right,
perhaps
right.
Perhaps he might have been alive today if he hadn't
sure.
been turned.
Well, you know, again, you know, they're not gods, and we have to be very vigilant about how we are cared for in this country. And even though they may think that they have a handle on how to control this situation, you know, as big as the United States is, and as many flights coming in and out of this continent on a regular basis, you know, occurring daily, it's frightening to think that anyone, you know, I just don't know how you can contain that without stopping the transport from where the hot spot is right now, which is in Africa, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It really troubles me.
Well, also, too, I mean, that's what the president said. You know, they're going to start doing some specific screening purposes. But, you know, you want to stop that. I mean, you know, sometimes you just want to say America's closed for a little while. We're like they do at clubs or restaurants. We're not letting anybody in right now. Until we work on what we have to work on here with all the people that we have here. And I've often thought that sometimes you just need to slow things down. But we know that that's not the case. And we also know that the administration of justice in terms of allowing, deciding who gets to come to this country and become a citizen is a little bit skewed against those that might be from the darker populated countries, darker pigmented countries. And that was a fact that I wish the congressman had an event to go to tonight, but he did mention it at one time, I believe on our show, that how they were talking about certain visas that they were allowing in terms of dealing with the immigration bill, but they also had like a limited number of people coming from, you know, the Caribbean and African countries. You know, they were trying to cut back on that while they were trying to increase other people from other nations being allowed to come in this country. So, you know, the racism is pretty prevalent. Racism is, unfortunately, nowadays in our country, it seems to be right at the forefront, I guess, with all the police stuff and the having a black president and all this stuff about people getting close to the president. So you can't help but wonder.
You're absolutely right. I mean, there's been a population shift in this country, and it's really growing. And in our lifetime, before either one of us should pass, I am certain the scales are going to be in favor of more people, brown people, existing in the continental United States than in any other continent in the universe. And this is what, you know, the government is trying to avoid. I mean, I saw a skit on TV, I think it was this past weekend, it was on Saturday Night Live, where they were just alluding to the fact that the racial factor is shifting, but white folks are still going to be in charge. And, I mean, it was meant to be, you know, funny, but you sit back and you think about it, and you say to yourself, you know, gee, you know, as long as they're in charge, it doesn't matter how many people come in. And you don't want to, you know, trivialize it and minimize it, but I just found it outrageous. But there was a certain element of truth there, because I am pretty certain this is exactly what the government is, and one of the political organizations, they're probably all political organizations are thinking that way, you know?
Yeah. And you know what thing, what's also causing that to be a scary kind of thing is every now and then, you know, you hate to see these racial things all the time, okay? You hate to see that, you know, the black community has more people being arrested than anyone else, and that
right.
they have a lot more beatings, and the police are mistrusting and beating up these kids for these people. But listen, us. Now, but listen, I'm looking at, you know, the paper this today, and two bad cops, you know, in Brooklyn were caught beating this Brooklyn teen, a teenager,
mm-hmm.
and they're now facing a grand jury probe. Then you have, you know, still the stuff going on down there in Ferguson. It's going to be interesting to see what happens to that cop that shot and killed that young man, because those people are not going to be giving up, you know, demonstrating in the streets, and they shouldn't. You know, because this is pretty serious. Every single time, you know, there is a situation, you have white cops beating up on black people and Latino people also, but mainly black people. You know, and you hate to constantly talk about race and color all the time, but it's
exactly.
there. It is right
well,
in our
and
face,
also,
and every time we stop talking about it, something else comes along and it smacks us right in the face again. So,
you know,
Jewish
people talk about their issues a lot, and I think African Americans would do well to use more of those examples that Jewish
yeah.
folks, and in terms,
mm-hmm.
particularly in terms of financial control and controlling certain financial systems, and getting in and making, you know, really getting a piece of the American dream and a piece of, you know, building businesses, owning corporations and things like
yeah.
doing business ourselves to build up our own net worth. So we should take a lot of lessons from them. I watched.
Sure, sure.
This is a veering, but it's kind of on the same subject. I watched Benjamin Netanyahu speak to the United Nations last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, before that time and before now, I found him a disagreeable person in terms of wanting what he wants at the expense of everybody else, not being concerned about other people's rights. And I thought that kind of maybe they're a little heavy-handed over there in terms of their rights and the hell with everybody else. But you know what? I realized in hearing him speak that, and comparing our situation here in the United States as a situation
mm-hmm.
of people oppressed, is that he's concerned with his people.
With his
he's
community, right. I don't blame him. 110%
concerned with his people, the safety of his people,
mm-hmm.
the growth of his people, the development of their nation. And
mm-hmm.
and he's
mm-hmm.
they're not particularly concerned about what everybody else in the world thinks. They
right.
are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we now have the power to protect ourselves, the weapons to protect ourselves, the financial things like that in place where we can control our destiny and protect ourselves. And I respect that.
Yes.
And I agree with that mentality. And perhaps we need to, like I said, follow a lot of those examples. I mean, you don't have to go to the other extreme in terms of oppressing other people's rights. But when you're talking about the survival of your people,
right.
you can't really be concerned about what everybody else is talking about when you were trying to survive and your people are trying to survive. So I have a newfound respect for him,
yeah.
for Benjamin Netanyahu, and his, you know, is being a leader for Israel and Jewish people, and said he's point blank with it. We're
yeah.
not going to allow anybody to control our destiny and nobody to put us in danger. And you can't be mad at that. You certainly have
no.
to respect that.
No, and you have to realize that, you know, you have to respect because the Jewish people went through during Nazism. Okay, black people went through the same thing, you know, with slavery. Okay,
right.
So. Yes, they're protecting their own. Yes, we should protect our own. We can all come together at one particular point, but not yet. You know, some of these police persons who are on the force and, you know, really are racist policemen, and they shouldn't be on the force. You know, there's knowing that they're all the, for instance, this cop who broke the window of this family. You know, I forget, I don't
right.
think it was in Missouri, it was someplace, actually crashed the window because they didn't have their seatbelts on or they were putting them on with two kids in the
well,
back.
Well, what happened was, let's get the facts straight. What happened was the guy refused to get out the car, and I guess they refused to roll down the window, and then they decided to break the window. Here's my assessment on that particular situation, and you guys let me know, you know, your ideas as well. My assessment is, it's wrong that the cops harass African Americans, and you know, we'll never know how many times there are good interactions between black people and minority people and cops, because Those aren't the things that are going to get on tape. I've wondered that today. But we also know that what we see on tape is the tip of the iceberg of what happens all the time with a lot of people of color when they have interactions with the police. Secondly, when we have, since we know that that is the case, that a lot of times they are not particularly concerned about our safety, and they kind of treat us a little bit different, a lot differently than they treat Caucasians, so to speak, then what your objective then is to survive the encounter. Your objective is not to antagonize them. So what I see sometimes is that even though Eric Gardner should have never been killed, he was murdered, clearly, but the way he was, his movements gave them all they needed to jump on him. Now, who knows? They probably would have jumped on him anyway.
Let me just finish the point.
His movements gave them ammunition. Then they were said, "Let's go. Let's jump on this guy." The guy that had the window broken I don't know the whole story, but I think he got out once and got back in, and he didn't have ID, which is something is kind of bizarre to me that so many people walk around without ID. I don't understand that. But if they asked for you to get out again and you don't want to get out and you guys are rushing, I understand the girl's mom was dying. But here's the thing. The thing is about surviving that encounter. It's not necessarily about antagonizing them to have an encounter with you where you could potentially end up dead, maimed, or something like that. Get out of the encounter first, then make your complaints. That's all I'm saying. Survive, because they're not concerned about your survival, so you have to be concerned about survival. So, and I understand getting fed up with it. I understand getting angry. I understand getting appalled. But here's what it is. It seems that a lot of them are determined to execute us.
Yeah.
And they're looking for any reason, any little reason to do that. So let's not give them the reason if you're looking at that potential life-threatening situation. Get yourself out of the situation, survive, and deal with it afterwards.
That couple in that car, they were perfectly within their rights because the policeman did not have the legal rights, you know, to open that door or anything. And that's what they were saying, a couple of attorneys, you know, on the air. Also, with Eric Eric Gardner, you know, had his hands up. He wasn't making, listen, I saw the video, like everybody else. He wasn't making any threatening movements at all. He had been stopped by the police before by doing some minor thing, you know. But the point
is,
he
was pleading for his life.
Yes, and he was saying, I couldn't breathe. They knocked him. He had his hands up. It was murder.
He didn't have his hands
up. Okay?
The way he was his hand. If you look at the video again,
I don't care. He had his hands up, and all they surrounded him like, you know, little mice or rats.
Here's the thing. I have a friend who told me there's what is and there's what ought to be. What ought to be is that he never should have had to go through that. But what is that he did, and he's dead. That's what is. So if somebody is determined to keep executing our people, particularly our men, I say survive the encounter. And people that know me know that, you know, I can get a little upset too. So, if I can come to that understanding, let me survive this encounter, and I'm going to jam this up when I get to a point, when I get out of this life-threatening situation, I'm going to do all I can, go to court, sue them, and do everything I can to get that person off the force and to jam their life up like they did at that point in me. But I'm not going to give them... I'm not going to let them kill me. I'm not going to give them the opportunity to even find any slight reason or justification, try to justify the reason why they executed another black man.
Going with this, Eric. I'm not to cut you off. I mean, I understand what you're saying.
All means.
When you're in the throes of a situation where, you know, it's a dicey call. You know, you just don't know what way they're going to react. And their assumption is that you're immediately looking to kill them just based on color and what they assume. You know, it's just one of those things. There's a problem with the culture, how these people are trained to think. And it's not just something that is just relegated to one race. There are black cops who I've seen just as offensive as those who are white, involving black-on-black problems and issues that come out of the black community. So, I understand clearly what you're trying to get at, but, you know, put yourself in the throes, put yourself in Eric Garner's shoes. I mean, this man was literally pleading for his life.
We're talking about at the end when it was too late, when they were determined. They were already determined to kill him at that point, right? In the beginning of the tape, he's like, I'm tired of this. And he's moving his arms back and forth in a manner that could be construed. Anybody in security will tell you that somebody's swinging their arms, they're not going to give him a chance to do that. I'm not saying whether it was right or wrong. I already know it's wrong for them to have done that to him and for them to have harassed him. I'm just saying what is that that's all they're looking for. In their minds, that's all they need. In their minds, they don't even need that. But to make it legal, to make it legal when they go and make up their lie that they're going to make up, whatever inkling we give them, they'll spin that and spawn it into something that, like they do, you know, and justify the reason for them being what they did to Michael Brown. They went and dug up videotape and tried to act like he just came from that, and that cop was responding to him being in that convenience store when Darren, whatever his name is, that murdered Mike Brown. He didn't even know that that was the case. He just saw this big black dude walking down the middle of the street, so he wanted to have this encounter with him. Now, I understand, you know, driving down the street and you see people walking in the middle of the street, maybe it's frustrating, but certainly you don't need to kill somebody, you know.
You're right.
But this is what they do. They'll make it up. They don't need the truth. They'll make it up. Anytime you release a separate tape from a separate incident that doesn't have anything to do with him ending up dead, that means there's some corruption somewhere trying to manufacture a story. That's why it took them so long to come out with the facts. They still haven't come out with the facts because there's corruption there. So
police—they have this 48-hour rule, and I don't know if that applies to every department, every police force, but I know here in New York they've had it for years, and that's one of the problems that they get away with certain things because by the time they've had a chance to analyze the circumstances and to clean their act up, you know, they've already changed the outcome of what actually occurred.
Of course.
And in a way, I'm glad that they're having these cameras to wear because at least people can visibly see what is going on as they're about to subdue someone or to do something that should not be done, you know?
You know what? I would like to see some of those cops in their car with their family and their two kids in the back and a black cop coming up and finding fault, any little thing, and breaking the window, smashing the window, and scaring the kids to death. Look, I believe in an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, okay?
Yeah.
Some of these cops have done that, and they shouldn't be doing it. You know, but the point is how long are black people going to, you know, put up with this? And you can't keep – I hate to even talk about race. But the point is, every now and then there's something that happens that a black person ends up killed or beaten or they go to jail for longer periods of time for minor things, some of them. I'm not talking about those who are in there, who should be in there. But, you know, good and well, it looks like the country, some people in the country are trying to really, really, you know, cut into the black population. Okay?
Well, they're trying
Why?
To make it,
because you look at
clearly
the jail.
There's an attempt, and the jails is old school, but clearly there seems to be an attempt by certain a group of these folks that happen to be police officers to, I mean, I don't know whether it's coordinated or everybody just has the same opinion, but it something is up, and I saw on the news today, I was watching one of the shows, and they were talking, and one of the gentlemen that was an expert, I think he was an ex-New York City cop on the Joy Reid show, said, you know, and there was a man from the ACLU there, and I think one of the two pointed out that a lot of these cops, if they have disciplinary problems, like one of the cops in the Hammond, Indiana situation, was relieved of his duty and his command in another police force, or he had multiple kind of charges against him for that type of behavior, I think.
And then went to join another police department.
Hold on. One of the gentlemen made the point that, you know, police officers can go to other, can move to other communities and join other police forces, even though
exactly.
they've been fired from another police force.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes to show you that this same cop who might have been fired for brutality to people that got away, or that part of his punishment or whatever his deal was that he just lost his job, can go to another state, move someplace else, and get a job as a police officer. So there's right there is a problem as well.
Well, they protect their own the same way the doctors protect theirs and the lawyers protect theirs, and you know
right.
it's sad, but you know it really takes something that you know you have to have damning evidence in order to show cause as to why somebody has to be dismissed. But if the PBAs around the country are anything like what they have here, you know, in New York, we're in a world of trouble because they only see things one way, their way, and that's it.
That's right,
right.
In their
well,
way. If they're in the majority group, you know, it's going to continue that way. You know, one thing, speaking on behalf of a lot of women, you know, I think women have even more of, especially people who are mothers, you know, we have more concerns about, you know, families being stopped by the cops and things happening to the men or to your sons or to your grandsons or something like that. You know, that's part of women's issues today is concern for this family especially when it involves police-community relations. And you don't even have to be doing anything. It doesn't matter how much money you have. It doesn't matter where you live. If you, you know, have enough money to live, you know,
mm-hmm.
away from poverty. But still, if you are a certain color, you know, you have to be very suspicious of members of the police department because you never know who you're going to be talking to. And that's a
right.
terrible
okay.
thing to live with because, you know, one thing you have to tell your kids, don't say this, don't say that.
That's true.
You
we
know?
Have another caller. We have another caller that I see wants to get in on the discussion. Let's go to this caller. Hello, caller. Hello,
you're
caller
on the
908 number.
Hi, it's Vonda. How are you?
Hi, Vonda. How are
okay.
you?
Okay. What's up, Vonda?
We're
Let's
just
move into what Vonda.
About
Let's,
you.
Well, Vonda,
enjoying
I don't know if you
show.
Heard. We're talking about some serious stuff, and we forgot we were getting close to your segment to talk about some happy stuff. So. Let's talk about some happy stuff.
Congratulations.
Okay. Thank you so much. I'm so excited about the opportunity.
Well, tell people why we're congratulating you then.
Well, I'm opening up a new place, a supper club
yeah.
called Duke Southern Table, and
Whoa.
I'm really excited about it. And it's
say the name
downtown
again, Vonda.
Huh?
Say it
say
again.
Say the name one more
it
time.
It's Duke Southern Table, and it's
Duke's
and Duke's
Table. Let me
Duke
just repeat
Elephant.
That. The name of your
yeah.
new restaurant is Duke's Southern Table, so everybody
Southern
knows
Table.
Southern Table. Okay.
Yeah,
and where
and it
what
is
what I'm doing? I'm sorry.
Where is it?
Hello. Oh,
yes.
I'm sorry.
Where?
It's 11 Clinton Street, downtown Newark, New Jersey, between Broad and Mulberry Street. Front door of the Prudential, back door of the Gateway.
I love it.
Yes. And
yeah,
I really am so excited.
Well, what's happening
yeah,
this Friday that we're all coming to?
Well, actually, it's going to be the grand opening of Duke's, and we're all excited. We have a wonderful lineup. I'm going to leave that as a surprise, but we're going to have a street party. Yeah, we have huge tents, and we'll provide food and alcohol, and along with some great jazz. New Jersey PAC is supporting us for this venue, and we have sound, grand piano outside on the street. It's going to be absolutely
wow.
fabulous.
Oh,
yes.
That sounds absolutely great.
Yeah, you can view the restaurant and go in, and we'll have some hors d'oeuvres for you inside the restaurant and, of course, a bar. And so, and we'll also have live music inside the restaurant.
Vonda, just let me tell people about your cooking. Now, you know, you've been a little it's like you're my extended daughter, but listen here. Your food, every time I think about your restaurant, don't you laugh. Because it's been going on for a long period of time. My mouth waters. I mean, because Vonda has the best cooking in town and out of town, everybody. I'm telling you right now. You think Sylvia's is great? Well, we have Vonda's, you know, in Newark, New Jersey. Because Newark, New Jersey, really, it's you won't believe it when you get downtown Newark. Now, there's a lot of things happening outside of downtown Newark. But downtown Newark, I'm telling you, and with the amount of African-American businesses and with the Performing Arts Center and with the Prudential Arena and with the school system is coming on slowly, but we've got to work that out some kind of way. And I think Ras Baraka, the new mayor, is really, you know, trying to do something. You know, he's the son of Amiri Baraka and Amina Baraka.
Right.
So I think he's really trying. So, you know, want to give him support. But Vonda, the food, I can't tell people. I can't even describe the food. And you know, I'm stopping. I'm coming down there.
And I want to talk about the food.
That's this Friday. What time?
And we're expecting about 1,000 to 2,000 people, and that's a big crowd. But
we want
people to come out and really realize that we are putting this together. I don't know if many of the listeners may know, but I just have to say that Newark used to be the number one place in the country for jazz. And we
need to
bring that history back to Newark. And so that's why we're providing a venue for artists and also for clients and customers to come in and really celebrate this town once again. We're coming back, and we're coming back with full force. And I'm so excited. There's five new restaurants. We're two blocks over from the Prudential Center. And there's five new restaurants from the Dinosaur all the way up to a new place, a tomato pizzeria type place. And then there's some other little... Yeah, it's just coming back, and I'm so proud to be a part of this new era.
Yeah,
so,
and the Latino
Vonda,
community.
This,
go ahead.
Yes.
Sorry.
And I was
Vonda,
just
this is
say
a,
that.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No,
Eric,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Excuse me. You were saying, Vonda, I'm sorry.
I was just saying that, you know, Newark, you know, we're evolving so quickly now. And, you know, we have a new Sonics in town, and we also have Whole Foods coming to Newark. It's a brand new day. And then we have all of these outside communities moving into the new downtown Newark apartments, and it's lively, and it's becoming more transit. And it's a beautiful thing to see and be a part of, and I'm just excited. Totally different city, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, let me just get in. Now, this is your second restaurant, right? That you're running. And as an African American woman, you're a business owner, small business owner. Your second place that you have, and in a minute you're going to be franchising, probably. I'm sure. How does that feel? I mean, that's kind of rare company.
Well, you know what? It's so funny because God is amazing, and I just will say that. And Vonda's Kitchen turned out to be a huge success. And I didn't know. I just thought that the food would bring them, and I was right on that. I prayed every night that they would come. And I just have some of the most wonderful customers. And it's so wonderful to see so many business people come from the downtown area.
Yeah,
of course, we have parks up there. Skinny, and they come and they enjoy and they sit there, they have their meetings, and it's just a very pleasant, light-aired environment, and the staff is so extremely kind, and I just love Vonda's Kitchen. I mean, that is my base, and I do a lot of catering. I don't know if you know that, but I do have almost three businesses now. I have a catering company, and we do some very large parties, Super Bowls and all kinds of NBA.
Wait a minute. Talk about the Super Bowl. You were chosen. Tell us about that.
Yes, it was a wonderful experience that I had the pleasure of going back. I'm going to Phoenix for the NFL this year. But last
and you
year,
supplied
I
the food,
one,
right? You're one of the
yes,
chefs.
I'm
one of the, yeah, chosen.
Yes, one of the caterers. And last year we participated in the VIP in the racetrack facility the day of the Super Bowl. And this was for the clients that, you know, sponsors, clients that paid a lot of money, $1,500 just to come to the actual tailgate party. It was wonderful. We had over 11,000 people and that we had to serve. And it was just fantastic. It's a life experience that I don't think, you know, not many get to, but certainly, you know, you'll remember it for the rest of your life. And I'm so excited about this year going to Phoenix for the NFL because simply you don't get a second chance at these opportunities.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations, congratulations. And we will see you on Friday at Duke.
Duke's Southern Table.
Right, and it's on Clinton Street, right?
Yes.
Hello?
Street,
yeah, on Clinton Street.
Park.
And Clinton is a one-way street. So people are going to have to come down Broadway, and they'll find it. It's very easy because it's a short street.
Yes, and
it's very easy.
Actually, the street will actually be closed off that day. So because we'll have tents out. But on Mulberry Street, there's several parking garages, and on Broad Street, and it's just really going to be a pleasant day, so you can walk around, but there is going to be parking, but, you know, because we're so close to the stadium, it's so much parking.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Listen, thank you. I can't wait.
I can't wait to see you.
I want to talk some more about your place. Hold on. Let's talk. I want to talk some more about your place. And you said that you're going to be doing the Super Bowl again, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The NFL.
Now,
that's
a special thing to be invited again. So does that mean that you are now one of the regular kind of caterers and event people staff, part of the, that they use
at
the NFL?
Well, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, 2 years in a row is a nice situation. I'm not going to give myself too much credit as far as maybe their personal, but I will tell you, it's a nice venue, and it just gets me revved up about, you know, the possibility of doing what they do for the Super Bowl, the catering company that we work with that has the contract, why not me? So
right.
To get the experience.
You go, girl.
Hey, if you don't mind, I just wanted to
interject here for a second.
I was just
Vonda,
listening. It sounds very fascinating. Hi, good evening, Vonda.
Hi, Wayne. How are you?
How are you? We need to have you on this side of the river as well. We're in New York, and I was wondering who was Duke?
As in Duke Ellington, because I
Yes.
And the thing that we felt like, this is how I felt, just admire him as an artist, but as a gentleman, he had a Southern touch, but you know, he was from the Bronx. But when you saw him, he was a class act. He always had black and white. And when you see the restaurant, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He always had black and white on, and he always looked the part. By the time he finished his set, he was just a real smooth, cool guy, got along with all of the clients there. Just beautiful. And that's really what we want to present.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't sound like as if you would personally know Duke.
I don't know, but I do admire him.
I'm old enough to say that I worked once with his son. That was many years ago.
No kidding.
Wow.
He was one of the I was in my early 20s then, one of the DJs at WLIB just before the Suttons purchased it.
Wow.
They were talking about 1970s, yeah. Mercer Ellington.
What was his name?
Okay.
Mercer.
Mercer Ellington. You remember that name?
Yeah.
Right.
Reading about it.
Yeah.
But
I
Vonda,
just
listen.
Loved his style. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Listen, and Terry Haskins did the decorating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and when you see the place, you know, it's so funny because Terry and I have been friends for many years, and Lisa Terry and I have been friends for many years. But when I saw the bones of this structure, I just knew there would be a person like her, you know, as far as Terry was Hepburn, you know, the simplicity that she provides, but it's such showmanship. She's phenomenal at what she does. And her company's name is Presentations Elements of Design. When you see the place and when you visit, you will know exactly what I'm talking about. I don't know another interior designer that has the simplicity that she does, but it makes it so elegant. It's going so
well, as you know, she's in demand by some pretty high-powered people. You know, so and all of you three have been friends for a long period of time, you, Lisa, and Terry. And, you know, of course, you know, some other people also. But really, Vonda, really, congratulations. I love it. I'll be there.
Congratulations.
I'm salivating because I'm
hungry
now.
I'm sorry. I wish I could, you know, magically provide you with an oxtail plate, but we'll get there.
Oh, please. She knows exactly what I want.
I know Kay likes oxtails. I appreciate you for having me today. I really do.
Well, listen, you know, you have been with us for a long period of time, so this is not the end of it. You know, so, you know, we'll be talking about whatever you are doing and all the different kind of foods and the menus, because I want a menu so I could tell people what's on for that day.
Okay. And we're going to have to do a we're also going to have to do a follow-up show. I got disconnected, folks. But we're going to have to do a follow-up show to see how the opening was and to get some people who actually attended the opening, and they can all tell us how great it was and encourage more people to go check it out.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about. So
thanks,
just
honey.
So exciting.
Thank you so much.
And good night, and thank you for your listeners for this. Okay.
Thanks, Vonda.
Okay.
Wayne, you think you've had good food in New York?
No, listen, I've been to Newark. I mean, I'm really impressed with what goes on out there. And, I mean, with no disrespect to Sylvia, but sometimes a lot of the food on that side pales.
I'm salivating even now thinking about Sylvia.
You know, I'm just wondering if she does any seafood dishes, you know?
Yes, she does. They quite well.
Oh,
she
does, yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm telling you
that.
The catfish nuggets. The catfish nuggets are a particular favorite of mine over there, but they have a couple other seafood dishes. That's just kind of an appetizer, a little lunch thing that you can get, but that's one of the ones that I often get when I go to Vonda's Kitchen, so I look forward to going to
Duke's.
I like
everything.
Yeah,
I like everything on her menu. There's not one thing that I don't like, really. Oh, boy, the ribs, oh, my God. I'm going to stop talking about it. The desserts, So anyway, Wayne, now you understand, right? So
I understand
clearly. And I mean, listen, if she was picked as for her company as one of the people to provide the food for, you know, the football games, whoo, wow, what a contract,
right? For the Super Bowl, as we just heard. Also, one other thing that as we move on, and we've got a couple more minutes to go, I want to talk about the terrorism, the recent issues with these ISIS members releasing these videotapes, which is these well-produced tapes, and they're trying to find this guy who, asking everybody who this guy is now, if anybody knows this current guy, who is kind of looks like a scene from an actual movie. I mean, it's so bizarre to see some of these clips that they play on the news of these promo videos, basically, is what they are, that these guys are releasing. And for them to have the production value that they have, almost looking like little movies or something like that, but to know that it's absolutely real life is a very scary thing.
Yeah,
it certainly is.
You know, Eric, there is one other thing I wish you would touch on. What's going on with the congressman now, Donald Payne Sr.?
Right. He's just working hard, and that's one of the things. As I talk about terrorism, that's one of the things that they're dealing with.
Yeah. Because he's a member of the Committee on Homeland Security, right?
I believe. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure.
I'm looking at his bio right now. Member of the Committee on Homeland Security, where he serves as a ranking member of the subcommittee subcommittee on emergency preparedness, response, and communications.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's one of the things that he is, you know, very much involved with, you know. So,
yeah.
Lots
yeah,
going
well,
on.
I was surprised,
not to cut you off, but I know
no,
Kay and we were discussing it, but I know the congressman was the subject of news last weekend, right after the congressional dinner, the Black Caucus dinner, regarding the Secret Service and the integrity of the Secret Service, because someone had actually imposed using his name to get access, and you know, it's I later found out who the person was. I was really sorry to hear, but you know, I don't
yeah,
know
well,
if that was
you know,
the
no, let Aaron tell you what happened.
I think that situation in particular was probably a disservice to the Secret Service, because you know, there are people walking around, people with the same name, and they I think they just kind of assumed, and then as the first lady reacted as if she knew the person, that made it even more calming for them. But I think this one was a case of that. I don't really want to get into details because we have things that we are trying to be, you know, concerned about. The things I think that it was a case of the media really piling on the Secret Service in this particular instance,
okay.
In my eyes. I mean, there was a breach that the person was able to get back there and get as close as he was without them really identifying. But you got to understand, several people walking around with the same last name, and you heard the last name a lot during the course of the evening, and the person was in the room and had gone through some sort of minimal security. Well, it wasn't so minimal. I mean, they had the Secret Service agents out in front and the whole metal detector thing. So there was security that people had to be screened for. So for me, this is kind of, you know, even though it was a breach, it was really kind of a case of the media finding one more element and kind of piling on the Secret Service with this one.
Okay.
You know,
well,
how they like
the thing is, when I was listening to CBS that morning, it sounded more than, you know, I mean, had I not gotten clarity from Kay, perhaps I probably would not have known and just would have thought the worst. But they did pile on to say, here's another example of a breach. And, you know.
Right.
It's just one of those
things.
And
technically it was a breach, but it wasn't like, nobody called, like a guy crawling over the fence and all that other stuff, a dude on the elevator with a gun with the president. So, and it wasn't those kind of things. So it was kind of that issue of definitely them piling on and trying to extend the story. But I just want them to get it together. We all want them to get it together enough so we make sure that our president is certainly going to be protected.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At the least. And I don't know if we got a chance to get into the Congressional Black Caucus week last that I was at. I don't know. Did we talk about it last week at all?
No, as a matter of fact, we didn't. No, no.
Yeah, because we missed you. You weren't here last week. Yeah.
Right. The annual legislative conference, the Congressional Black Caucus, is a week long, starting on Wednesday, ending on Saturday, of brain trust workshops. Various members of the Congressional Black Caucus presenting a workshop about various issues that are important to the community and to the country as a whole. And it was a great time. And then in the evenings, they have receptions sponsored by various people. And the week culminates with the Phoenix Awards, I believe, at the Black Tie Dinner on Saturday evening, where the president usually comes and addresses the body there. So Bill Clinton in the past has come and addressed the Black Caucus at these awards dinner. I don't know if George Bush ever came through. I don't know if he even got an invitation, but
I don't remember that. I don't recall
him, but it's a really good way for African Americans to network, to hear the status and to be in tune with the status of what's going on with Black people in this country and around the world. One such brain trust we went to, my father and I, was a brain trust about Sheila Jackson Lee was presenting the brain trust or workshop about Nigeria and the opportunities that were available in Nigeria, and had a governor of a state in Nigeria that was there, and he was particularly a popular governor who had done a lot of really great work in this particular state in the country of Nigeria. So Things like that. Jesse Jackson was on the panel. There were several people in terms of, and they were talking about how to do business with Nigeria in terms of exploration and resources and minerals. You know, they have all these resources and minerals there. Oil is a big thing. So they were talking about the opportunities that were there and available.
Yeah.
And those are the type of discussions and things. And you sat in a panel yourself, Mom, about
I was a moderator
like
for
that, several
for
times.
For 2 years.
That.
Yeah, the Black Caucus panel, Wayne. And there were about six people on the panel, and, you know, it was
for
really very
Congressman
exciting.
For the late Congressman Donald Payne.
Yeah, for the late Congressman Donald Payne Sr., right. So
right.
So it's Junior is now following in his footsteps, and I think he's doing a wonderful job. And, Eric, you are right there with him all the time.
Right.
So both of you, when are you going to run for office, Eric Payne?
Wayne, have you ever been to the Congressional Black Caucus?
Yeah, I used to cover it back in the day. I've attended a couple. I'm recalling one instance. The last one I didn't get a chance to get access. I had actually invited my dad to come down with me about 10 years ago, and unfortunately, I was not in a position to get his credentials straight. So we spent an interesting weekend in Washington, just the same. But you know, I find a lot of those events very interesting. You get a lot of good information. That's one thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that there's so many other events associated with what goes on with the CBC.
Yeah.
That week,
right,
and
exactly.
It's really the place to be at that, you know, around this time of the year, you know.
Mm-hmm. And these workshops.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I look forward to getting into one again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if memory serves, I think George W. Bush addressed the
caucus.
I'm forgot, like, in the early 2000s. I don't think his father ever did, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think W did get there, as I remember. I was trying to recall that.
Yeah.
And apparently he did get up in there, so that's good to know.
Right.
That at least W made the effort and showed up, you know, because since he was not a friend. But he did, was able to, the late Congressman Donald Payne Sr. was able to work with him and get several million dollars out of for that he committed to AIDS in Africa and helping famine and things like that.
Yeah.
So he was responsible for that. I always got the feeling that George Bush, if you spend some time with him, he probably is a likable person. He's just not the dude that you want to drive the boat. He's not the one that you want to be
the
speak. You don't want him to have the responsibility of being the designated driver.
You don't want
not
George.
George.
Have that. You know, so, I see the picture of him sitting when he found out about, you know, the terrible thing that happened, and he was sitting there in total shock. So that's the picture
I have of him. Yeah, I mean, I don't even have that's one of many pictures, but it just seems, he just always seemed to me that, you know, he really, about halfway through the job, and maybe he was just a patsy. You know, maybe they were just using him. Maybe crazy like a fox, you know. But to me, he wanted people to like him, and the situation that he put America in and the type of president he wanted and the way he was being pushed to be by those who were probably really running the show caused people not to like him as much. And he seemed like an individual who wanted to be liked. And I get that impression of, you know, the whole always doing something goofy for the camera and doing something to try to make people laugh. You know,
such as the outfit that he wore when he was getting off the plane, when the plane landed on, what is it, Air Force, whatever it was. I'm talking about Junior, not Senior.
Mm.
Yeah.
Remember when
he
strutted?
The thing is, I think Eric did a great analysis of what his character was all about. You know, and it's unfortunate because I think he really tried hard to live up to what his dad wanted him to do.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
But when you stop and think about all the things that, you know, he put this country through during that period, you know, I still maintain that the wars that we got involved in, the lives that were lost, he still has to, you know, that blood is still on his hands.
Absolutely,
you know,
without a doubt.
You know, and that bothers me. But apart from that, you know, just goes to show that, you know, here in the United States, anybody, you know, with at least a little bit of, I guess, help could actually fulfill that position. Hopefully,
oh, yeah.
You have
oh, yeah.
a number of people around you to guide you the right way, not like Dick Cheney and all the other Karl Roves and all the Koch brothers and all that crap. You know,
the fact of the matter,
it's amazing that Obama has done so much to correct the mistakes that,
boy.
You know, we went through the last, you know, 8 years prior to that, and his father, 16, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You know, it's incredible, like you said, the accomplishments that this president, Barack Obama, has been able to accomplish with such unprecedented opposition. Stock market at an all-time high. The unemployment rate has gone below 6% for the first time, I think they said, since 2001. So you're talking about affordable health care. You're talking about monumental things that they try to sweep under the rug. Got the number one terrorist at the time, the number one terrorist, the arch-villain, the arch-nemesis of America, picked him off. So all these things, you know, that they pile on him about, it's like each accomplishment, I guess they're treating him like the brother on the job.
Exactly.
You know,
you get that treatment
that the first brother got, you know, that they have to get used to. Okay, one black guy doing the job, we got to mess with him. Then another one moves to the neighborhood, okay, a little bit more accepting. You know, that's to me, you know, I've always thought that's the kind of treatment he's getting, like the brother.
Yeah.
The brother on the job, you know, the new brother in the neighborhood.
It's, it's unfortunate, but only a black man could handle that, if I may say
right.
so. You know,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm. right.
they gave it to the right person.
You know, I think people more, you know, people who are racist probably should take solace in the fact that he's half white. I mean, they could turn around and say, you know, well, you wouldn't have really had a black president if he wasn't half white.
Yeah, I know. I used to hear that. I have a friend of mine. She's in Florida.
God.
I don't know if she's listening. She's on the radio, too. Jewish Joanne, I call her.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh my God.
The person, but, you know, I'm sorry. But that's
as long as she's a good friend. She's a good friend.
Yeah, she's a good friend.
Sure.
Wayne Gilman's opinions are not necessarily the opinions of the K Thompson Live.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the disclaimer. But the bottom line is, she is a good friend.
Blame
I didn't mean that with any, you know. Yeah, I couldn't have said that on WLIB back in the day,
yes,
of course,
you
without,
did want to.
without Madison Avenue coming down. What did he say? That sort of thing.
Right.
But
so you're saying she's a good friend?
And the deal is that when he was first elected, you know, she would always talk about, well, how come no one talks about his mother? You know, and all that business.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, Joanne, you don't follow the news. We've been talking about his mother every day, you know? But, you know, God bless. I know in her own way she meant well, because she was happy that he was elected. But at the same time, I also felt that there was a little, just a little spot in her heart that felt that, you know, we're making such a big deal about him being black, you know, yada, 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 and the whole bit. But just one of those things. So,
and that's something that, you know, that everybody in the country can take claim in. He's half a white guy. So, I mean, you know, white people
right.
should rejoice in that, too, that you know, this history was made. But, you know, there are some, obviously, who do rejoice in that. Clearly, he
we have about maybe 40 seconds to go, you know,
already?
Until the end of the show. Yes, I'm listening to, you know, the person who is, you know, on the end of the mic in this, you know, pre-recorded, you know, you have a certain amount of seconds
right,
to go
right.
in your show. So, you know, we want everybody to listen to 60 seconds now, she says. And pre-recorded, this is Kay Thompson Live with Eric Payne and Wayne Gilman and me, Kay Thompson. We thank Vonda Peterson, Vonda McPherson. We'll see people
right.
down at Duke's, down in Newark on Clinton. Duke's Supper Club or whatever, but it's Duke's.
Southern
it's
Table.
You can't
Duke's
visit.
Southern Table.
Oh,
yeah.
let me
Duke's
tell you
Southern
the food.
Table, is it? I'm sorry. My bad, Vonda, if you're still looking.
Duke's Southern Table. Just remember our shows are archived. Let me just get that in. Here at Abroad Talk Radio, go to K Thompson Live Show.
And I don't want to hear from B'nai B'rith or any of those organizations.
Backslash K Thompson Live. And that's your personal friend. And you guys have that. That's how you guys relate to each other. So we know that. But we want to say thank you to everybody for tuning in. We're getting ready to be out of here, right? On the K Thompson Live Show. I'm Eric Payne.
I'm K Thompson.
And over
here
in Brooklyn.
Okay.
See us next week.
Right.